Good morning and welcome to Local Matters. I hope you're having a great Friday morning and I hope you have a great weekend. I have the pleasure of meeting with and talking to a friend of mine, and it's Tommy Copeland, the Putnam County EMS Director, and it also serves as the Putnam County Coroner, which a lot of people don't know, and we'll talk some about that role that he serves. But Tommy's been in Putnam County for a long time. We want to get his experience and get to know him, but haven't had a chance to have him on. And what a service they provide for us and everything they do for us. It's just one of those things where they're not, to me, overlooked, but it's one of those things we don't focus enough on and all they do. Because, Tommy, and I want to talk about this as well. If you look at state law, ambulance service is not required in a county. You know, it's not written in the Constitution or the TCA that a county has to provide ambulance service. And we'll talk about what they can do later on and how some people privatize and some people run their own and however that works. But some people just, you know, take y'all for granted and that you're part of the Constitution and the TCA, and you're not really. You're there, but you're not required. So I want to talk about that, but good morning.
Good morning. I appreciate you having me on,
Bill. I'm delighted you're here. I want to start out with, and I think I know the answer to this, but how long have you worked for Putnam County Emergency Medical Services?
I've been with Putnam County for 35 years, started in 1985. I was just 19 years old.
Wow. Of course, our current county mayor, Randy Porter, was in your position before he came to be county mayor, and he started not long before that, did he?
He started, I believe, in the late 70s, yeah. Maybe the early 80s.
So y'all
He's the one that actually hired me both jobs.
Yeah. Y'all been together a long time. Y'all, it's talking about knowing each other. Y'all know each other pretty well.
Absolutely.
So 35 years, that's a long time. You don't look like you've been there that long, but was that your first experience at 19 in emergency services?
It really was. My father was a firefighter with Cookeville Fire Department.
Okay.
And so he served there for 22 years, then went to the civilian side of Cookeville Police Department. So I've been exposed pretty much my entire life. And then, believe it or not, when I was 11 years old, the show Emergency was on TV.
Okay.
And that really sparked my interest in paramedics because that was kind of a new thing. It really wasn't a thing until the early 70s, late 60s.
Right.
Anywhere.
Right.
And so that sparked my interest at the age of 11, and I kind of kept that goal my entire life. I always wanted to be a paramedic, and, you know, I've stuck to that.
So I'm putting you on the spot because we did not talk about this, but you sparked my interest. Before there were ambulances and before there were paramedics, how did people get transported?
Well,
and I know you know the answer. That's why I'm asking you.
Yeah. Many years ago, you know, you really didn't think about seeking outside health care unless it was a real probably going to end in your own death crisis,
right,
kind of thing. The doctors actually would come to your home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you might take a horse ride, buggy ride, or whatever. More likely, the docs came to your house.
Right.
And then it kind of transitioned in the 40s and 50s more in the inner cities and kind of worked out to the more rural areas that you had the funeral homes,
right,
that took up,
right,
that. And then in the mid-60s, late-60s, it became more of a thing to have an actual ambulance service. And I think here it was 1971, 72 that the ambulance service was formed, and it was a private thing.
Right.
Until 1980 when the county took over Putnam County EMS.
And so that was a decision made 40-something years ago. And ever since then, the county has had their own ambulance service and provided that for. And we can talk about it now, Tommy. You know, I work with 13 counties, you know that. And some of their makeup on our emergency services is different. I know one county privatizes their ambulance service through the city. I think that's Clay County.
That is correct.
The city of Salina privatizes the ambulance service, and the county contracts with the city to provide it for the county. Most of my other counties have their own, but I have a county currently right now, and I've had the county executive from Canyon County on before, but I was just down there Monday night, and they're looking at developing an ambulance authority, and you and I talked briefly about that the other day, and it's a different makeup, and we're not going to get into a lot of details because you said you wasn't as familiar with it, but you're aware of it. And basically what I gather just in my role at CTAS is that a county can set up an ambulance authority through either commission approval it's got to be commission approval, but they can appoint the authority, or the county mayor can appoint the authority, and then that authority oversees the ambulance service. And so that I can't grasp that. Like, I can't wrap my head around an authority overseeing it because I'm so used to the county, it being part of the county where the county mayor is basically the supervisor of the ambulance director, and the ambulance director runs the ambulance service.
Correct.
So,
and that's the model that I'm most used to, most aware of, most familiar with. That, you know, I'm directly report to Randy Porter, the county mayor.
Right.
And he works with the commission and all that. And I run the ambulance service. And I have a lot of help. I mean, this is a fairly big operation.
Right.
But I directly report to them. There's not really an intermediary, especially in the hiring, decision making, that kind of stuff. And if it's something I need to run by the mayor, I will. But day-to-day operations, I take care of myself. And having, to me, it seems a little cumbersome to have an ambulance authority, another committee that, you know, you have to go through with big decisions.
Sure.
And especially if you get into the hiring, firing kind of thing through a committee.
Right.
That can be very problematic. I know at an arm's length, I suppose, you know, some other counties that have used that model. And it could be problematic, and it depends on how it's set up.
That's exactly right. It could be political, where you have a 5 or 7-member authority, and 4 people want one person, 3 people want another, and it just gets political. But if it's set up right, like you said, it could be successful. And you know, and I don't want to speak for the Cannon County operation, but you know, I told the county executive, I said, hey, that's one less thing you might have to worry about if it goes to authority, and that way you can focus on other stuff. He said that's true. So we'll see what happens there in Cannon. But it's interesting how ambulance service is how they're made up in the state of Tennessee. It's not this way across the country. There's other ways, and I'm sure you could speak to that, but we won't get into that today. But there's so many ways to provide emergency services for citizens of a county, and the one way we do it is we operate it, the county operates it. And I think that, to me, that's the ideal way.
Correct. And what you said at the beginning of the program, you know, that the ambulance service, EMS, is not a essential service, is what it's termed in Tennessee.
Right.
The fire and police are. That the county has a duty and obligation to provide those.
Sure.
EMS is not set up that way. And that is one of the things that they're going to work on this year with the state legislature,
okay,
trying to get that changed.
Didn't know that. So
so that is one of the things, the priorities that we have as the Tennessee Ambulance Service Association, which is kind of a members group.
Yeah, lobbying group. Yep.
And all that. And that is one of the things they're going to try to work on and fix, that it is not. But I think if you took the EMS service out of most places, it would be noticed very quickly and probably harshly, you know, by the citizens. Because that's, I mean, it's become an expected service.
Right.
I guess would be.
Well, and that's what I was going to say, because, you know, I do a lot of classes. I instruct a lot of classes for county officials, employees. We do a lot of training over at the training room and at the emergency medicals. I call it the emergency operations center, the EOC, with ambulance service and 911. It's a great training room, by the way, and it's just very been very helpful to our agency. But I do a lot of budgeting classes, and we talk about required services and optional services. And optional services is where ambulance service falls. However, like you said, you pull that away from a county, the citizens are going to know it within minutes. Going to know it, and they're going to say, no, this is a required service for us. You can't pull that out. So I think that's I think, to me, they might as well go ahead and put it as required service, because it's essential for us to have a quality of life in Putnam County.
Well, and with you and your other job, I'm sure when something happens that is not to the public's liking, you hear about it.
I do. I actually got a good cussing yesterday from a citizen in Cannon County, because I just there's certain things I can and cannot say based on my job, and I got a phone call. But anyway, we won't talk about that on the radio. I just took it and smiled and went on. That's all I can do. So your daddy obviously was in public safety.
He was,
and you watched that growing up, and then you said, like you said, there's a TV show you saw that just intrigued your interest, and I guess at that point you knew you kind of wanted to get in this profession.
Yes, since I've been like 11 years old,
that's
all that I've ever really wanted to do. And I had the good fortune to grow up in a place that has really good quality EMS service, good quality first responders, a good quality community.
Right.
You know, and I've been very fortunate. I didn't have to move to find that.
That's true. And so when you started in 85, do you remember how many employees roughly were there?
Probably 20 full-time.
20 full-time. So how many?
Probably another half a dozen part-time.
Okay. How many trucks or ambulances are running pretty much on that back then?
I think we had 2 during the day,
yep,
2 at night, and had a 3rd call crew.
Wow.
And that was it.
So how is it now compared to now? I know you got more than that employees. I know you got a lot more employees than that.
Yeah, we've increased a little bit. We're up to about 60-ish full-time employees. And about 30 part-time employees. That number changes a little bit. And we staff 11 trucks during the day. in their own different schedules.
Sure.
So we can kind of stagger to accommodate, you know, when they're needed.
Right.
And then we go down to 5 trucks at night.
Okay.
And those guys, they stay really busy.
Now, we got about a minute and a half in this segment. I was just curious, and I know the answer to this, but I want our listeners to know, what kind of schedule do your trucks run? Because some do 24 on, 24 off, or as far as the crew. How does Putnam County do it?
We do 12-hour shifts, 7A to 7P. And we do that for 7 consecutive days is my default schedule.
Okay.
Now, I've also got some convalescent trucks that run like an 8-hour shift, and they're staggered. They may start at 8:30, 9 o'clock,
sure,
whatever, to kind of accommodate doctor's trips and that kind of thing.
Right.
Because that's the peak time of that business. But I have always been allergic to the 24-hour shifts, if you will.
Yeah.
If we were at a place that had very low call volume, I could live with it.
Right.
But with us, we done a survey 3 or 4 years ago, and we are one of the busiest per truck services that I surveyed.
Yeah.
You know, we run a tremendous amount of calls. And me personally, I don't see how that one of my paramedics can go out at 22, 23 hours into a 24-hour shift and provide the quality of care and service that we are going to have.
Right.
You know, they're just, I mean, nobody's going to be as sharp.
Yeah, oh, I agree.
And if you're not busy, it's no big deal.
That's right. That's
but
true.
We are.
And I want to get to the amount of calls y'all take per year and if that's fluctuated any. And we'll talk about the pandemic and well as the pandemic. I said pandemic. Excuse me. I think some people do want to say that. But the pandemic and talk about how that's affected y'all when we come back in the next segment. You're listening to Local Matters on this Friday morning with Ben Rogers. I have Tommy Copeland, the Putnam County EMS Director, with me. We got 2 more segments, and I can't wait to hear what else we can learn about from Mr. Copeland. We'll be back in just a moment.
What's so important about shopping with locally owned businesses?
When you shop local, your hard-earned dollars stay here in the community, helping to benefit your friends and neighbors, local schools, roads, and all aspects of community life.
But what happens to my money if I spend it online or at a national chain store?
In most cases, the profits go far away, out of state, corporate headquarters, or even overseas.
It doesn't take any extra effort to shop local. OfficeMart on South Jefferson and Cookeville is your locally owned office furniture and supply store. For over 35 years, they've been proud to serve businesses in the Upper Cumberland with quality and value. You get real customer service, too. And unlike shopping online, you can actually see and try out the large inventory of office furniture in their showroom. And when it's delivered, it's not a box on your step. They're glad to install and set up everything. OfficeMart. There's no other locally owned office store in the region. South Jefferson Avenue across from Hardee's. Shop local at OfficeMart.
Welcome back to Local Matters. This is Ben Rogers. Tommy Copeland is my guest. He is the Emergency Medical Services Director for Putnam County. The Ambulance Director is like what I want to call it. And he also is our full-time coroner, but he has people under him, deputy coroners, that help him in that role too. And we'll talk a little bit about that before we leave. But, you know, we're talking about shifts, you know, with your crew. And I have a county that actually just got a call a Wednesday morning from a county that said, hey, you know, our ambulance service, and it's a smaller county, but wants to go on 24-hour shifts. And you talked about why you don't prefer that. They are smaller. I don't know their call volume. I didn't really ask them yet. And there's something they're looking into, but they're wanting to go that route. But we do 7 on. And then seven off
for 12 hours a day.
12 hours a day. So,
and those guys are on call that night as well, or okay, that day. You know, so if they work 7A to 7P, they're on call from 7P to 7A.
Okay. So that's kind of how Putnam County is structured. And let's talk about call volume, because I know it since I've been a county commissioner, and I, even though I'm in county government every day, and that's my career, I've learned so much by becoming a county commissioner. And about the details of operations, especially with your operation and some others in the county. Call volumes over the last, I've been in, this is my 7th year, it seems like they fluctuated. What's before last year, before March of last year hit, what was the call volume like for in an average of 12 months for y'all?
We were looking at about 18,500 calls per year.
Yeah.
And we actually, you know, looked at several ways to compare that to other places. And we done a survey a couple of years ago and found out that we were at about 2,800 calls per truck per year. And our closest competitor in this area was actually White County.
Okay.
And they run 2,200 calls per truck per year.
Wow.
And, you know, our crews are busy. I don't want them to be slow per se.
Right.
Because I think one of the things that keeps our crews really good and really on top of things is they have a lot of volume.
Right.
You know, they've seen this recently. But I think we're right now a lot busier than we need to be.
Sure.
And the COVID has had a role in that. The tornado, of course, had some role in that. And just I think more people are expecting EMS services for things. So we're at a point that we do need to get a little more staffing, a little better staffing, I think, would help.
Yeah, and so over 18,000 calls before COVID hit. And that's, if I do my math, that's roughly 60 calls a day, basically, is, you know.
Yeah, in the 50s.
Golly, yeah. That's a lot of calls. Of course, you talked about how many crews you had on, but during the day. But it's just, that's a lot of people going, that's a lot of trucks going, a lot of volume going out, and it's a lot of work.
Definitely is.
And, of course, White County, you said, was close to you, and they're half our size. You know, so
correct.
that's another discussion for a day, but that's a lot of calls, over 18,000 a year. Now, when COVID started, did you see calls going up or down?
Yes, our calls are up significantly.
Okay.
We just finished the calendar year. And of course, you know, looking at calendar versus fiscal year, whatever, we finished at about 19.3.
Oh, wow.
So we're up over 1,000 calls a year already, looking at just the calendar year. We're up over 1,000 calls, and so our crews are really stepping and fetching, if you pardon the expression.
Was it a couple years ago that calls were down? Was that, because I remember in budget committee, you're like, the calls have been down. We're not really why, but you figured out why, I think. Didn't you have an idea of why calls were down?
Well, that's one of those things, like I said, I've got a long history of Putnam County EMS. I've got a long history of management at Putnam County EMS. And looking at our call volume, we'll usually go 2-3 years of call increases.
Right.
And then we'll usually have a year that calls will decrease. And then we'll start back up again, usually the next year, and they'll up for 2 or 3, 4 years, and then they'll go back down for a year.
Do we know why?
I don't really have a solid answer on that. I would love to know.
Yeah, I would too. That's,
you know,
kind of strange.
It's hard to delve into, you know, are we working less wrecks or fewer heart attacks?
Right.
Or, you know, taking fewer convalescent trips, you know, it's usually all over the board.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't have a solid answer on that. But I think as the population continues to grow, we get more businesses, get more interstate travel, et cetera, et cetera. I see that number continuing to climb.
Continue COVID, and I don't want to beat it to death, but you and I haven't got to talk about it. Calls are up, but how did just COVID protocols, CDC guidelines affect your employees and the daily routine of treating and transporting patients? What changes did y'all have to make?
We had considerable changes. One, you know, trying to protect ourselves and protect our ability to respond.
Right.
Right now, the crews are in a mask if they're on duty. You know, when they clock in, they have to wear a mask, and they have to do that until they clock out.
Okay.
You know, and that is an annoyance, to say the least.
Yeah.
And I'm sure many would say it worse than that. We also got some better masks to protect the employees.
Good.
And all that. And, I mean, the scope of this pandemic was more than what I expected we would have anytime soon.
Right.
So we actually, for a while, prohibited them from going out to eat.
Sure.
You know, and all that. And it seemed like there for several months, a lot of the calls we had were COVID-related.
Right.
So,
yeah.
I mean, it was just crazy, and it was a tax on the crews, having to put on special suits, having to wear a mask, having to take special precautions. It kind of got to be kind of a running joke at EMS almost that we were changing policies very frequently because CDC would change policies and we would adapt our policies to them.
It's hard to keep up.
It is. It's very hard, and I mean, it's one of those things you just have to take it as they learn more about COVID,
right?
You know, and adapt that information and try to get into policies that are hopefully friendly for the crews and helpful and safe, safety aware for the patients that we encounter.
Sure, sure. Well, and before I break on this next segment, I do want to talk more about you as a person because to me, we're blessed to have you. I mean, your experience and Randy made a good decision when he come over to put you there. But you just don't sit back and manage. I've seen you on a truck. I've seen you work a truck. I've seen you in a truck riding around and working. But you have certifications as well. And I want to talk just a little bit about the certifications you've obtained throughout your career. Just talk about those right quick.
Sure. I became an EMT in 1985. I got my paramedic license in 1987. And then I went on to get my critical care certification in 2010.
Yeah, and that's the one I kind of wanted to highlight. Was that intense? Was that process intense to get that certification?
It was. I'm not exactly sure if maybe it was because I was older at that time. Yeah. I had kids at that time. But it seemed like that, basically a semester of school, it seemed like that was a lot more intense in my three semesters of paramedic school.
Oh, wow.
Because, I mean, even my kids got to joking about it. You know, you never do anything but study for critical care. You know, Sam, right. One of my sons, he brings me a book to read this. And it's like, oh, yeah, you're in critical care school. You can't do that. So, you know, if I wasn't physically working, I was working on that certification.
How many of your staff have that certification, that critical care?
I'm very lucky. I've got about 30 critical care paramedics.
Yeah, and I think that the reason I mentioned, I think it's outstanding that, you know, half of your full time has achieved that goal and has taken the time. Because I'm like you, Tommy. It's I just got a certification a couple of months ago or last month, and it was work. I'm 40, and so for me, it was just a lot of time, a lot of work, and when you get older, it's a lot harder.
It is, and this too, you know, the critical care certification, we explored a lot of things that paramedics generally don't have to fool with.
Right.
You know, that was not my initial training, you know, more about ventilators and chest tubes and blood gas values and lab values and things like that we didn't pay much attention to in 87 when I went through.
So it was worth your time to go through.
It was worth my time.
Good deal.
I feel good about having that certification from the standpoint of working the truck when I get to do that.
Yeah.
And also from being able to manage my folks that do that.
Sure. Yeah. So for y'all listening, if you see Tommy show up on the truck, he's certified. He's got some good credentials. We're going to end this second segment. We'll be back with one more with Mr. Tommy Copeland from Putnam County EMS in just a moment. Welcome back to Local Matters. This is Ben Rogers. I got one more segment with Mr. Tommy Copeland from Putnam County EMS. He's been wonderful so far, giving us a lot of information and letting me know about some things I was not aware of. But I want to talk about Tommy now. You know, obviously it's county funded. The EMS is county funded. But, you know, the collections y'all bring in really do well to pay for everything y'all do. Y'all almost break even some years. It's amazing how much money, you know, how efficient you are with your expenses, because a lot of people don't know you have to write off money every year as far as the billing goes. And I want to talk about that and collections. People don't understand the Medicare piece. So when there's a Medicare patient involved, or how is Medicare involved with y'all billing and collecting?
Sure. We use a third-party biller out of North Carolina, and they do our collections for us now with a lot of oversight from here locally. We've got a couple of ladies that work in the billing department. And they do a tremendous job both getting them the runs on the front end so they can code them and bill them out correctly, and then also overwatching them on the back end to make sure they're doing their job.
Right.
And we do a good job collecting, you know, on the things. But when you're talking about like Medicare, that's one of those entities. They represent about 50% of what I bring in every year.
Right.
But they set a price. And that price is non-negotiable.
That's right.
You know, you either do it for that or you don't do it for that. Right. They've got a lot of stipulations to make you do it. TennCare is kind of similar. They're in the 7-10% range of what I bring in. But they set a price that is well below market value. You know, as an example, they pay a little over $100 for a run,
right,
and that normal price on that is like $225.
Wow.
So they paid a little bit over $100. So I mean, it's designed to be a money losing operation.
Yeah,
I guess.
And
it's sad, but there's really nothing that I can do about that.
No.
And like you said, we do have to write off money every year, but at the same time, we do a good job of collecting. We collect the majority of just rough numbers, but say we collect $4.8 million. On a $5 million expense, we're getting close.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because it's not anybody's fault, but the way county government in the state of Tennessee is set up, it's set up for a lot of the services to be paid for by the taxpayer.
Correct.
But it, when you have something like ambulance service, or when you operate a jail and you can get some money back from that, it's always a plus because it's less of a burden on the taxpayer. But our taxpayers may not understand that you may charge $225 a run, but you're probably not going to get $225.
Oh, no.
And it's just not going to happen because of the way it's set up with like what you just said. But every year the commission has to approve to write off amount, and I think there might have been one year, and I don't want to name the commissioner, they're no longer there, but asked why do we have to write this off? Why can't we collect this money? Well, we can't. But as you just said, there's no way to get all 100% on some of these runs. So, but I'm thankful that you're able pretty much almost to fund your whole budget because of what y'all do. So that speaks volumes, because there's other counties out there, Tommy, that cannot do that.
And I have a disadvantage, if you will, following Randy, the current mayor, that he set the bar very high.
Right.
And he had the bar very high for a long time before I took over. So it wasn't like, you know, he was collecting 30% and I'd come in and collect 50 and be great.
Right.
You know, I had to keep up that 80-90% collections.
Yep.
And, you know, that he set the bar very high.
Yeah, we don't want to talk too much good about him. His head will get bigger if he's listening. But, no, he did a great job. But, Tommy, you've stepped in and done an amazing job. Your staff, of course, your assistant chief's Darren Ford.
He is.
And he's wonderful. I talked to Darren when I need to talk to him more. But what a great guy. And everybody over there, because I don't know everybody over there. I know a lot of people. I wish I knew everybody there. But so thankful for what they do, because their time and the physical part of the job and the emotional part, because people don't think about the emotional part. It's amazing what y'all do for us. Now that we've talked about how you bring in money, you know, I know the budget time's coming right up, and you don't have to
right around the corner
divulge exactly what you're wanting, but I know it's a process every year. You come to the budget committee, and you do a great job. You and Darren do a great job laying it out about what your needs are. And the commission has done pretty good, I think, as far as trying to help you. And I know there's probably more we could do, but what is one of the things you see that's in your way of getting to where you want the department to be at its max potential?
Well, the biggest issue, and it has been for the last several years, is staffing.
Right.
And it's not a Putnam County problem. It's not an Upper Cumberland problem. It's not a Tennessee problem. It's across the U.S.
Sure.
And I feel good that I think that we've been proactive with me and my management group, with the commission, with Randy as a mayor, that we've done some very proactive things in the last few years, that I've got full staffing, and I've always maintained full staffing. You know, I might have a month or two that I had to wait to hire somebody, but I've been able to do that. But I know many of my counterparts that have, you know, 5 or 10 positions open. They just run a story this week, I believe it was, about Coffee County.
Right.
And they had like 7 positions open out of like 35 full-time positions.
Wow.
So staffing, trying to get enough people to do it, is the big challenge. When I started in 1985, if you were a paramedic, you worked on the ambulance.
Sure.
That was it.
Sure.
Now we've got aeromedical, we've got fire departments, we've got clinics and doctor's offices and hospitals that hire paramedics. So there's a lot more competition for those people. When they work pre-hospital, they work on the ambulance, the risk of injury is a lot higher. The risk of contamination, you know, bringing something home to your family, is a lot higher. The call volume is a lot higher than working in some of these other places.
Right.
So it makes it hard. Tennessee, if you look at the raw numbers of how many paramedics and EMTs and all that stuff are in the state, we're in pretty good shape.
Sure.
When you look at how many paramedics are willing to work on an ambulance, yeah, that number goes way down.
Right.
And so that's my biggest challenge. And, you know, like I alluded to earlier, you know, we've got a call volume that continues to increase, and I need to increase staffing. And that's one of the things, like I mentioned, that, you know, if the crews are too busy, then they start looking at other things to do.
That's what I was going to say. And it's not that Putnam County, of course, I think we could always do better as far as compensating our employees. I've said that on this show, is if you want great services and you want to provide great services, you got to have great people.
Correct.
And so, but I think Putnam County does a pretty good job on compensation for employees. We could do better, obviously, but you know, I've heard, and you've said in budget committee, hey, I've lost so and so and this person, not because they're going to make more money, but because they're worked to death.
Correct.
The calls in Putnam County are so much more than a neighboring county to us mm-hmm. that they're going to go make a little bit less money with less calls. And it's mm-hmm. worth it to them to go, you know, and that's true.
Yeah.
I mean, that, and so do you find yourself losing people to neighboring counties?
You know, I had a real big problem with that a few years ago, and it's less so now. I have still lost a few folks to the neighboring counties. But I think some of the proactive things that we've done, trying to incentivize the pay, education, improve them, improve staffing a little bit,
sure.
take down the call volume some, I think those things have all helped. And like I said, I feel very fortunate that we have maintained our full-time staffing.
Right.
But it's one of those things, it's not like a point on a map that you go to. It's like a moving target.
Right.
You know, when you get to Baxter, you got to go into Carthage,
right.
if you will,
right.
that you can't just get there and stay there. You have to keep moving forward.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of where we're at now, you know, improving the pay, the benefits, the, you know, the attraction of Putnam County. And we've had a good track record for a long time of being a busy service, an aggressive service, a service of good equipment and all that. And that stuff, you know, between funding money from the feds, stuff that y'all have funded directly through the county commission,
yep.
priorities that we've set and taking employee input. I think that, you know, we continue to be in a pretty good spot there, but it's not, I can't rest on my laurels, if you will. We have to keep moving forward. We have to keep looking at ways to keep people engaged and keep people wanting to come here.
How many miles do you try to get on a chassis?
We generally try to get at least 150,000. Going to 200,000 is not unheard of or
right.
uncommon. Over 200,000 miles, the state has some requirements. We have to get a mechanical every 30,000 miles on that
sure.
vehicle and stuff. So really, after they've had 150,000, 200,000 miles on the road here, they're pretty shot.
Yeah.
You know, they're road hard. They need to be redone. And we do something that saves the county some money that we remount, meaning that we take a new truck
right.
and put the old box on it.
Sure.
We usually do that a couple of times in between new trucks. And so that does save the county, you know, considerable money doing that. But those trucks they're road hard at that 150,000, 200,000 mile mark. They need to be redone, repainted, upholstery. You know, things fixed.
Those equipment costs and vehicle costs for you, that's a big part of your budget. You
know? Oh, it is.
Personnel is the biggest, but after that, you got to maintain those trucks and maintenance and then keep buying new trucks. Before we leave, last week during the ice and snowstorm that come through, would you have a lot of calls?
We did, and we had a lot of slip and fall, if you will.
That's what I was, my next question, what was the majority of the?
Yeah, we had some wrecks, not as many as maybe you would anticipate.
Right.
But my gosh, getting out and just walking. Yeah. I mean, you can see you're here in the studio with me. I had shoulder surgery yep. recently, and just me getting out, trying to go places, you know, was a real thing because trying to get out there and not slip and fall, which would be bad for me,
sure.
it's bad for anybody.
Sure.
And there was a whole bunch of injuries, people getting out on black ice. They didn't see it. Boom, they're gone. And then we have to get involved. And sometimes that's a ordeal because it may be a hour-long process, what should be a 15 or 20-minute thing, because we got to get to them, get them back to the truck. You know, we may have to involve fire and rescue and law enforcement, you know, to get to them.
Right.
Y'all know there were some very inaccessible places
oh,
in
yeah.
the county.
Yeah, easily. Right around where I live, west of Baxter, we live on a ridge. It's pretty easy to access, but down there in the holler, it's tough. So,
yeah.
Tommy, thank you so much for being here. I appreciate you. Glad to call you my friend. Glad to have you in Putnam County, serving our county and serving everybody here, and just so thankful for what you and your employees do. Tell them thank you for me, and I'll do anything I can to help them and appreciate you. It looks like we got rain this weekend. It's going to be rainy, so everybody be
yeah.
careful. We've enjoyed a few days in the 60s, but the rain's coming back, but at least it's not ice.
The rain's an improvement over the ice.
That's
every
right.
time, and
so
thank
just,
you for having me, Ben.
Anytime, Tom. I'll have you back again because I want to keep everybody informed to what you're doing and how well y'all are doing it. But everyone, have a great weekend. Stay safe out there. Be nice to one another, as I tell you every week. Smile at one another. Be kind, and we'll get through all this together. Hope you have a great weekend. This has been Ben Rogers and Tommy Copeland on Local Matters. We'll see you next week.